Hello, everybody. This is Salil Tripathi from the Institute for Human Rights and Business. I'm in Oslo, but at the other end of the line, I have Christopher Bennett in Sarajevo, in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Chris is the author of Bosnia's Paralyzed Peace, which is a book on the country which had very, very brutal conflict through the 90s. And he has also written a book on Yugoslavia's collapse. And he has been with the Office of the High Representative, the Balkans Director for the International Crisis Group, and he has been reporting from Yugoslavia. And right now, he is engaged in the preservation of the historical heritage of Sarajevo, which is a wonderful historic city. Thank you, Chris, for agreeing to talk to us. As you know, this is the week of the second week of June. This is the week of the fifth anniversary of the UN Guiding Principles for Business and Human Rights. And Bosnia had its own challenges at the end of the war. One was how to find jobs for returning refugees, how to find jobs for those who had stayed and suffered, and how to make sure that past conflicts do not reemerge and there is some kind of reconciliation. And the guiding principles try to bring companies, communities and civil society and everybody together. And Bosnia itself had some experiences of working with various principles that were developed. So I just wanted to know your impressions on applicability and feasibility of such principles in a situation where there has been massive conflict.
Well, actually, I believe that such principles would have been very, very important 20 years ago at the end of the Bosnian conflict. Mm-hmm. Sadly, they didn't exist at that time. Now, within the Dayton Agreement that ended the Bosnian conflict, we have both a constitution for the country and a blueprint for a peace process. And we also have really all human rights legislation tacked on to the bottom of the Dayton Peace Agreement. Now, in this way, we also have institutions such as an ombudsman to try and address some of the human rights abuses in Bosnia and Herzegovina. However, the reality is that the peace process has not succeeded in addressing many of these issues, and that in terms of business, really, the country was partitioned in the war, and the businesses, which were in essence publicly owned, were the spoils of that war. Mm-hmm. And this remains the case to this day. Now, in the immediate post-war period, I lobbied when I was working for the International Crisis Group for the introduction of what I called minority employment principles. Yes. Along the lines of the McBride principles that were brought in Northern Ireland for US investments in the 1980s. But unfortunately, at the time when I discussed this with the UN, i.e. the World Bank, what the answer I got was always that it's difficult enough to generate employment without adding on complications such as minority employment principles. But the reality is there have been very few returns. There are very few minorities who are actually employed. And sadly, in terms of public companies, the situation is particularly bad.
Yeah, and I remember that very well. In fact, I'm glad you reminded me of that, because in 2002 or 2003, I was there and researched for Amnesty International the Alumini, the plant in Boshtar, which at that time, of course, was, you know, part of the spoils of war, as you might call it, and under the control of Croatian management. And it was impossible for Bosniaks who were coming back to regain the jobs or reacquire the jobs that they once had. So I can see how problematic that would be. And the approach one had to take at that time was, of course, to appeal to the good sense of the company, because non-discrimination laws of the kind we would want simply weren't there. Is that fair?
Well, that was certainly the case then. Yes. Now, at that time, Alumini was a particularly powerful company. Alumini is no longer as powerful as it once was, largely because the entire metals sector, and in particular aluminium producing companies, have suffered greatly. So today we have fewer than 800 people who are employed there. Mm-hmm. But the Bosniaks and the Serbs who were employed there have not been reinstated. I think there may be a dozen Bosniaks and Serbs who are working for the company today, whereas before the war, there were more than 4,000 people employed there, and that really was a multi-ethnic workforce, yes, which reflected the then ethnic breakdown of Mostar, which was the most mixed city in Bosnia and Herzegovina. But I think what's interesting here is there's nevertheless been some progress in relation to Mostar, because now its ownership structure has been clarified, and former employees are, to a certain extent, part owners of the company. So there has been some progress, but it hasn't really gone far enough.
Right. Now, reflecting back on your experience and the fair labor principles, I think that's what they were called, that were, I think OSCE was looking at it at that time. International organizations did make some effort, serious effort, to move at least through these principle-based approach. Is that the best way one can deal with post-conflict reconstruction? Because the guiding principles certainly rest on the premise that there's a functioning state and companies do their part. The state has a duty to protect rights and companies have a responsibility to respect rights. Now, in that kind of a context, do you think the best way forward is indeed through such principles and multi-stakeholder arrangements?
Well, the part of Bosnia where there's been most progress in integrating companies, integrating police forces, educational systems, is the city of Brčko, which was under direct international supervision for a long time. So the international community could impose settlements there. And that's what has made Brčko more representative of multi-ethnicity than anywhere else in Bosnia and Herzegovina. But the reality is, everywhere else in the country, that we have mono-ethnic ruling structures, and those mono-ethnic ruling structures have rejected the reintroduction of multi-ethnicity. There was, however, a constitutional court ruling in 2000, which was the decision on constituent peoples, which examined the Bosnian constitutional system and determined that it was discriminatory and that this had to be addressed. So there was then a process to try and implement the decision of the constitutional court, which in the end was a solution was imposed by the high representative of the time in 2002, Wolfgang Petrić, which set up a system of multi-ethnicity at the entity level and at the state level in government, but and also institutions to protect the vital national interests of all peoples throughout the entire country. Now, that process was supposed to go further and to extend to the publicly owned companies, to extend into the municipalities, but there was a change of high representative, and the whole approach of the international community at the time changed, and in essence, this was put on the back burner, and we've never returned to it. So sadly, we really haven't followed up here, and if we look at today's situation, the European Union has the lead. The European Union in 2014 launched a compact for growth and jobs, so very much focused on the economy and economic reforms, largely because it had been unable to address certain human rights issues identified by the European Court of Human Rights in relation to the representation of people who are not from the constituent nations, i.e. who are not Bosniaks, Croats or Serbs. So we haven't been able to succeed there. And so we moved on to trying to put the emphasis on the economic field and on economic and social development. But sadly, there's been no progress in this field, despite the switch in direction. And the reality is there was no mention of human rights in the Compact for Growth and Jobs.
So do you think principles such as the UN guiding principle should be mainstreamed and should be ingrained into peace agreements and ingrained into future governance mechanisms that are created, reflecting on the Bosnian experience?
I think this is very important. I think that gender mainstreaming has actually been very effective in putting the issue of gender high up the agenda and is having an impact. And I think mainstreaming such principles could make a very big difference. And I believe that, for example, the European Union and obviously the IMF, which is currently negotiating with Bosnia and Herzegovina a 550 million euro standby agreement, that this organization should actually be looking to mainstream such principles if they're going to be meaningful. I mean, I would actually go further, and I believe very much in the responsibility to protect, and this is almost part of the responsibility to protect in terms of our responsibility in the wake of ethnic cleansing and of genocide to rebuild. And I think that mainstreaming such guidelines would be critical.
Now, one part that, you know, these principles don't address, and it's simply because they don't have a coercive power and because they do not have a framework of dealing with issues of impunity and immunity, is how do you address past wrongs with regard, for example, to corporate behavior? Can such a framework be built? There's a big conversation going on at the Human Rights Council and so on of considering an international treaty for corporate behavior. Is that possible, or is that the way one should look forward? I suppose this goes back into a much deeper philosophical question, particularly in post-conflict environment, that should it be a truth and reconciliation kind of model, that you reconcile, you move on, you forgive, there is some remorse and there is some forgiveness and there is time to move on and create a new country? Or should one go into the issue of trying to have trials and war crimes to be, you know, accountability for war crimes and so on?
I think war crimes is one issue,
yes.
But if you like, corporate crimes,
yes,
is a separate issue here. We've had a very successful war crimes a tribunal in relation to Bosnia and Herzegovina and the whole of the former Yugoslavia, which has really shaken up many with international justice. But at the same time, we haven't looked at many of the war profiteers who were the beneficiaries of ethnic cleansing, who did seize the assets as the same time as they expelled populations. And I think that that is very important. And then if you're trying to build a healthy society, you have to also be looking at reintroducing multi-ethnicity in key companies, and then looking at hiring principles, because we did have hiring principles in Northern Ireland in the 1980s in terms of US investment, the McBride principles.
Yes.
And I think that similar principles could and should be adopted in Bosnia and Herzegovina, but haven't. So you have investments here, and because the companies come into what is a largely mono-ethnic area, and they're working together with the local authorities, which are largely mono-ethnic, then they're actually recruiting mono-ethnic workforces.
Right. Yeah, and that of course raises the risk of future conflict at some point, because some communities do better than others, absolutely. I really look forward to reading your book, Paralyzed Peace. Wish you all the very best with that, and all the best with your work.
Thank you very much, Salil.
Yeah.